This is Karen Lyle of SailSport Talk in a conversation with Maggie Shea as she and Steph are preparing for the Olympics in Tokyo.
When I was talking to all of the team back when you were all here in the San Francisco Bay Area, I was really impressed by the way that everybody was pulling together, because at that time no one knew who was going to be going to Tokyo. Do you find that your teammates are, you know, outside of you and Steph, are also being very supportive of you during this time?
Yeah, absolutely. The U.S. sailing team is a really close group of athletes, and the sailing community is also just such a great network of people that are, you know, welcoming. We travel all over the world. People welcome us into their homes. You know, that sort of sailor community is very real and live, and helps us kind of feel welcomed wherever we go. And then on the athlete side of things, we've kind of had to stay physically away, but we definitely stay in touch. I'd say we do a better job staying in touch. And in terms of pooling resources, it's a necessity when we're traveling abroad, you know, to get together and share responsibilities. And it's just much more efficient to pool resources when you can. You know, there have been times that we weren't totally synced up with the other teams, and therefore we had different training schedules. There were a couple of years that we didn't necessarily train with the other USFX team. And most of that was because we had a different coach and they had some job, you know, part-time jobs in the picture. And at that point in the campaign, it was pretty critical to continue working on our own individual agendas. But, you know, it's a great part of it when we can all work together. And I think we've made some of my closest friends, and we are a fantastic support network for each other, and I can't imagine campaigning without these athletes by my side. In terms of breaking through onto the podium, I think that last year's World Championship was the first time Steph and I really put together all the pieces to have a good performance. And that's not to say that, you know, you have a good performance and it doesn't guarantee that your next one's going to be great, or if you have bad performance, your next one's not going to be terrible. You know, we don't like to think about ourselves as only as good as our last result. You know, we really want to work on all the building blocks to deliver a good performance. We have been, you know, on the heels of a lot of the teams that campaigned for two quads for a long time. So a lot of the veterans that you saw in Rio, you know, we've been really on their heels for several years, and now we're competing more regularly in the front with them. And so I'm excited to race in Tokyo, but you know, we just focus on all the little building blocks to deliver a performance, not necessarily the end result.
All right, thank you for that, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. And it is Tuesday. This is when we do our SailSportTalk.com segment, and last week Karen Lyle told us that she would be gallivanting around the British Virgin Islands. So in studio, we have also from SailSportTalk.com our friend Patty Mangan. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Rick.
Great to see you in person.
Great to see you in person, too.
We're waiting on our guest, Dawn Riley, when we get her in. But we were just talking in the break before we went on the air. You said something about a black flag.
Yes.
For Phil Robinson. That's not bug spray.
No.
What are we talking about here?
SailGP, which we're all familiar with now, just raced in Plymouth in the UK. And 2 days of intense racing. And on the second day, first race, Phil Robertson, who is a skipper from New Zealand, but is on the Spain team, he pulled a very, you want to look at this video. You want to go look at this video. He pulled a very, very quick and tight pull ahead on the line, on the beginning line. And he got black flagged, which is a big deal. He was basically out of the race, that particular race. He didn't like it. He didn't like the call. The UK skipper thought it was right on. So,
can you explain exactly what that is when you said he pulled? What did he do wrong?
So imagine there's 10 boats about coming up to the finish line as fast as they possibly can. They want to get up on their foils and they want to be ahead from the moment you get ahead, that's the race. Mm-hmm. And particularly, they're not very long races. So he came around the mark in such a tight angle that two other boats were coming in the same, in a kind of a more like at 4 o'clock, and he caught around and got ahead of them. He was going faster than them. He didn't, nobody hit each other, but the UK boat did have to correct a bit, and or maybe it was a US boat, but somebody corrected. I think it was United States, and he was off and running, and then they called a black flag.
Why was that wrong for him to go faster?
He put lives in danger.
Okay, so he did something that was reckless.
Considered by the umpire, yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. So the umpire was looking and said, when he looked at the space and he said, for you to go that fast in that little area there, that was reckless and dangerous.
Not the fast, but the where he positioned himself and where the other two competitors were coming. And how one, the United States, had to correct.
So they had to get out of his way.
They had to pull away. Now, yeah. I would say that I've read some verbiage afterwards, and he thinks that he was going so much faster that they would not have had to pull away. Hmm. He's up and coming, and he's one to pull. I'm not going to call it a stunt. He's mm-hmm. just willing to take a risk.
Your personal opinion, was that just good, bold racing? Or
it was bold.
Or was it reckless? You liked it, didn't you?
I liked it. I was watching YouTube. Mm. It wasn't even live. And I was screaming in my office. So, yeah, go watch the video.
Would it be sort of the same thing like if you were in a, let's say jockeys in a horse race, and the guy, like, you know, the one jockey kind of put out his arm a little bit. I mean, because there's no penalty for going into dangerous places in car racing or horse racing or any of that.
Okay, no touch. There's no touch allowed, right?
No touching.
Yeah.
So. Sounds like my prom. Still waiting on Don Riley here. By the way, if you have a Salesport question, the lines are available at 1-800-878-PLAY. Let's give, as I said, I've known you forever, but give people a little bit of your background, because I know a lot of times you're behind the scenes with this.
Okay. Well, right now I have the position of a Commodore of Pacific Interclub Yacht Association. So that's 110 yacht clubs in Northern California. I don't deserve that.
Tension on deck.
And so that is giving guidance, education, leadership, management, how yacht clubs are managed, how leadership comes up through the ranks, and how we can provide models of the future success of yacht clubs.
So it was just interesting. Is the Commodores thing, how much of it is a ceremonial thing, or how much of it is people calling you every day saying, we should do this, we should do that, how about this, how about that?
Well, I took a call last week about a club interested in the future. The yacht clubs have gone through the pandemic like everyone else, and mm-hmm. one yacht club is asking for advice on what are the options in 2022. Should they not thrive? Should they? What are their options for closure, merging? How can they look at 2022 and make a good decision about what is coming? On the flip side, there have never been more boats sold. There have never been so many new boat owners. Everyone understood as our worlds got smaller and smaller that they could see people out on the water. And they thought, well, that's something I've always wanted to do. And they went out and they bought the boats. At the same time, nobody wanted to sell their boats. And nobody could manufacture and sell new boats. Wow. The supply chain stopped.
Wow.
So
so a boat is like a PS5 right now. Can't get one.
Yeah. So I have to say, I would think it's much better than that.
So that's interesting. So if you were going to be backing anything, it would be a place that's making boats right now, like financially?
Oh, yeah, definitely. They will have a pipeline. They will have a wait list on their orders. Oh my goodness! In the Bay Area, all the boat yards that work on the boats, they are just slammed, and they'll get a boat in, and they're working on it, and then a supply, a product won't be able to get here, so everybody is juggling. I know people whose boats have been in the yard for 10 weeks for wow. what would normally be a 10-day project.
Rick Tittle with Patty Mangan in studio here from SailsportTalk.com. So, is there a little bit of a danger in that too? Because like, I know what I'm doing with an inboard motor. If I got a sailboat, I would have no idea what I'm doing. Is it a little bit dangerous to have all those neophytes out there?
Well, good question. So California started a California boater's card, which if you're under 40, you have to get a boater's license, much like a car license. You have to take a test. You don't have to take a physical test. You just have to take a test that lets scores your understanding of the right-of-way. So even people who know the right-of-way can make mistakes. So sure. Are there more neophytes on the water? Yes.
What's about, I'm over 40, so I wouldn't have to take a test.
Not now, but I think you kick in maybe next year.
Do they just assume that the people over 40 already know what they're doing, or they're mature enough not to drink in boat or something?
No, the deaths in boating accidents was really amongst the younger people. And so they started with 18 and around 18. And then they just kind of rolled it out in, I think, 5-year segments.
Oh.
So that one thing, it was new. And who do we need to protect more than maybe the skilled sailor and or power boater is that that teenager that has got behind the wheel and is having a really good time and is not thinking and doesn't have the experience to be able to react when even another person might do something they don't expect. So it's rolling out slowly, and it's a statewide program that will bring a lot more, a reduction, I hope, in boating accidents.
Yeah, you think about the anticipation that you have to have. It's a much different thing than being in a car, obviously, because you have to take into account the water and the waves. I remember when these two tankers in the bay, this is when I was a kid, they slammed into each other, and then they ended up a mile apart. And you said, well, why didn't they just stop right there like a car accident? It's like, because of the way, I mean, these are the things, it's a completely different way of thinking. You have to be more anticipatory, don't you? Is that a word, anticipatory?
Yeah. Well, and think of the tonnage behind those two ships and mm-hmm. how did they collide? I don't know the accident, but if it was a glance, you know, they still have their momentum and it's going to take them a while to come to a stop and to understand that the damage done requires a stop and therefore an investigation and so on. I don't know anything about that particular crash, but you do have to, get yourself safe and then deal with the situation.
So as a Commodore, are you also on, very close contact with the Coast Guard and all these other entities?
I am.
You kind of work in concert with all of them?
I do. In fact, you might remember Captain Marie Byrd. She was here for 2.5 years, and now I just went to Yerba Buena for the change of watch, and Captain Lamb is now in place, brand new. We're talking 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
So they came in like a bird and went out like a lamb?
Yeah. You're so quick.
All right, Patty Mangan, I want to know your most perilous moment on the high seas. What was it?
Goodness. I have a memory of being scared. I'm trying to see. Oh, goodness. We were outside the Berkeley Marina. We were planning on coming in. The Berkeley Marina has a large cement wall, breakwater,
mm-hmm.
and we were just pulling down sails and so on. I was at the helm, and there was a rollers coming in from the gate, right? So there was about 7-8 foot rollers that we were in. Not typical on the bay, but because of this breakwater, it was creating a resistance. And my good friend Janelle stepped up from below, and she had an egg on the side of her forehead. And I said, "What happened?" She said, "I got hit by the boom." So I had missed the hit. She had been hit when she was facing away. She went down to see how she was. She came back up with half an egg on her head.
Was that her skull?
That's her skull.
Ugh.
That fast. There is just what I don't even know what it's called. And it was, you know, turn on the engine, get into the marina, pull up as fast as we can, jump off. She's running. She's fine. She's on the move. Get up to the Berkeley Yacht Club, call 911, put her in an ambulance, put her nephew in an ambulance. And that left me and Ken, the skipper, as the only crew to get back. Mm. But the hyperventilating that you do, you know, that whole like
this hypervigilance.
Yes. Okay. And you just want to get it taken care of. And then they're gone and you don't really know if they're okay.
Wow.
And that was very, but we all responded quickly. And I hope I don't have to go through anything like that.
So the lesson is never go sailing.
No. Keep your eye on the boom. She took her eye off the boom. Now, different sailboats, the way that the boom comes across the cockpit, some of them are much shorter. It's never an issue. Or they're higher.
Right.
But earlier boats, the 80s, yeah.
You know what? Who needs Don Reilly? We just did a whole segment with Patty Mangan. Very, very interesting. I had a great time.
Well, me too.
All right. There she is, everyone. Patty Mangan. Go to SailsportTalk.com. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back.